What's up, everybody, and welcome to the second ATL All Day podcast. I am Carlos Collazo, co-editor of the site, along with Brad Rowland, my fellow co-editor. How's it going, Brad?
What's up, everybody? Good, man. Good day.
All right, very cool. So today, if you can't tell by the title, we are going to be discussing the Mike Budenholzer acquisition by the Hawks. You can correct me if I pronounce the name wrong, Brad.
I'm pretty sure that's right, but I'm right where you are on that one. But I think that's right.
Yeah, that's going to take some adjusting too. So, anyways, what are your? I know if you guys didn't realize, Brad put up a post on the site, kind of immediately after this happened with his thoughts. But I'm going to give him a chance to kind of talk to you guys about it right now. What are your initial reactions to this hiring?
Yeah, it was a pretty quick take, but I like it a lot, actually. For everyone that doesn't know, Budenholzer is a former, current San Antonio Spurs assistant coach. He's been the head assistant for Greg Popovich for the last 5 years, and has been with the organization for, I think, 19 years. And the Spurs are basically the preeminent organization in the league as far as the way they're run and how they do things with a sort of average and middling payroll. So I automatically kind of trust anybody coming out of there. It's not the biggest name, obviously, because we don't even know how to pronounce it.
Well, it might be the biggest name, literally, but...
Yeah, the longest name. but initially, I'm definitely a fan of the hire, for sure.
Yeah. And if you guys don't know, I haven't really kept up with the NBA before this year, but I'm definitely going to be keeping up with it this year. It's exciting, and for me, I think it's a great move coming from a limited intelligence on the NBA, just because the Spurs do seem to be like the organization to model if you're going to model one. And with Danny Ferry and his connections with the Spurs organization, it made sense to me that they picked him up, and I'm really excited to see what he's going to bring to the organization. And I wanted to also ask you what you thought about them hiring Budenholzer in the middle of the playoffs. That kind of caught me off guard, and I can understand at first how they kind of have a long break after sweeping the Grizzlies, but still it seems a little bit odd for them to hire him in the midst of a playoff run and a possible championship.
Yeah, it's not. I don't think it's unprecedented, but it's certainly sort of an odd timing. David Aldridge came out actually, I think, earlier this morning, and kind of announced that the Spurs had let him negotiate with the Hawks during this time period, which was kind of a big announcement in itself. And then it seemed like an hour or two later, it was done. So, the timing is interesting, and I guess he's gonna stay with the Spurs through the rest of the run, which doesn't really surprise me. And Larry Drew's still employed by the Hawks at this moment. Yeah, so I haven't seen the contract. I wouldn't. He might not even be officially employed as of this moment.
I think they've just agreed. Yeah. I don't think they've nailed out the details yet, but it's kind of one of those imminent things pending a physical.
Yeah, one of those, except for with a coach. But yeah, it's. The timing is interesting, but I think it gives a little time. I mean, it's pretty much the only... my guess is that Danny Ferry felt like if he didn't lock this down now, he was going to let him get out on the open market. And this is clearly the guy that he wanted, so...
Definitely, and it's... I'm not sure if it makes too big of a... or too much of a difference, because what's the date that teams can start negotiating with free agents?
July 1st.
Okay. So originally I thought that it was good to kind of get the coaching situation handled and you could start focusing on building your team, but it doesn't actually seem like that'll be the case. Seems like we're going to have to still wait a little bit, but I guess it is good to have it settled as early as you can so the coach and management and current players can kind of get a feel for where the team's going to go and what their goal is.
Yeah, and if he had settled on Budenholzer for sure, I mean, the Spurs could be playing until like June 20th or somewhere in that range, which only gives you that's a 10-day window before free agency, and the draft is also in that period. So it would have been definitely a crunch to hire him and get ready for the draft and free agency in that window. So this at least sets it up to where Danny Ferry can kind of know what he wants and get to work while the Spurs are in the finals.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's really good that they got it done too early. I was surprised, but definitely pleased with it. So I just figured we could talk for a little bit about kind of the other coaching candidates that maybe were top of the line. Maybe some other people expected the Hawks to hire, but obviously now we've got our coach. Just talk about the pros and cons of the other top guys that you thought they were targeting.
Sure.
And if you had anyone in mind that maybe you would have preferred to Budenholzer.
Yeah, I guess the biggest drawback with Budenholzer on paper is that he's never been a head coach in the league. There were two sort of bigger name guys that the Hawks talked to. First was Stan Van Gundy, who was the former Orlando coach that coached Dwight Howard. And that would have been the guy that I would have wanted in the perfect scenario. I think he's got his career winning percentage in the NBA is 64%, which is pretty outstanding between Miami and Orlando. But he basically went on the radio in Orlando and kind of announced that he didn't want to coach this next season. He'd already spoken to Atlanta, which made that kind of interesting, but he kind of pulled out from that. And then the other guy would be Nate McMillan, former Blazers and I guess Seattle Supersonics before they moved to Oklahoma City coach. Again, the guy with 930 NBA games coached with a 51% winning percentage. Guy that I've always kind of liked. I mean, he would have been an interesting system guy. He's kind of a walk it up the court kind of coach, slow down pace, which would have been interesting to try to attract free agents with that kind of pace. But both those guys have been head coaches before, which would have been sort of preferable. But the Hawks have kind of a history now. This is the third straight time they've hired a guy with no head coach experience. Back to Terry Stotts, Mike Woodson, and then Larry Drew, all were just assistants before they brought him in. So I guess this is the fourth one in a row. Sorry, I should say that.
Cool. And I know you mentioned the winning percentages of these coaches. And in the NBA, I feel like it's a whole lot different than a manager for a baseball team. Do you feel like a coach really does have a significant impact on the performance of a team, whereas a manager maybe can't really impact that much over the course of a baseball season?
Oh, yeah, I'd say baseball is probably the least of the three big sports in terms of how much impact they can have, because that's just one-on-one battles for the most part in baseball. I mean, somebody has to hit the pitcher. But, yeah, they certainly have a big impact. I mean, it's definitely a player's league. Like, if you don't have the talent, you're probably not going to win, but they can make
well, like you said, Stan Van Gundy, he had reasonable success with a pretty mediocre Orlando team. Is that true?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he had Dwight Howard, but he took Orlando to the NBA Finals with Dwight Howard and a bunch of shooters, which was pretty impressive. And then knocked off LeBron in the process, and had back to back 59 win teams in Orlando without a second superstar, which is pretty impressive. And he's certainly known as like an elite sort of X's and O's guy, which would have been nice to see, but. With Budenholzer, I mean, you're coming from a great line. I mean, Greg Popovich, in my opinion, is the best coach in the league. So to be learning directly from him this whole time gives him kind of a leg up, too.
Yeah, and I was reading one. It might have been even the official presser on the Hawks website, but they got a quote from Popovich, and he said that anyone who's really been following the Spurs knows that Budenholzer has basically been a co-head coach rather than an assistant with the role that he's had with the team. So that's definitely nice to hear. How do you think this impacts the free agency for the Hawks? Do you think this maybe encourages players to come here, maybe have a little more hope that we're going to contend? Does it have any effect at all, do you think, or does it hurt the chances of hiring some of the guys like maybe a Chris Paul or Dwight Howard?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be really interesting. I'm not sure that the Spurs have the cachet like with big free agents, but the first thing I credited them, so I'm not stealing it, but Jason Walker for the Hawks was the first person I saw make the point of Josh Smith is probably not a good fit with Budenholzer, and hiring him as a first-time guy probably kind of puts the writing on the wall that Josh won't be back. I mean, I wouldn't make that at 100%, but it certainly doesn't increase that possibility. And there's one, the one guy that I immediately thought of was Tiago Splitter, who I actually wrote a piece about this morning before that even came up.
Yeah, you guys should go check that out.
Yeah.
It was good.
It was a guy that I kind of want the Hawks to target. The Spurs' current center, quotation mark center, I guess, but Tim Duncan plays a lot of center as well. But Splitter's a guy from San Antonio that clearly worked directly with Budenholzer for his whole career so far. That might be a guy that we could see target. But I don't think it has any negative impact at all on trying to get somebody. Larry Drew wasn't going to be the driving force in going to recruit someone either. So I don't think it's a step back by any means. And Danny Ferry can kind of sell the one vision, like that Spurs model now. Because he came from the Spurs as well, which we should mention. That Danny Ferry is the Spurs guy. And they had a previous relationship. So it's not definitely not going to be the big point in trying to recruit a free agent, but it won't be a drawback either.
Okay, cool. I guess now we can kind of talk a little bit about him never being a head coach before. How much of an adjustment do you think there is in the NBA for assistant coaches taking over a team for the first time? Is there anything we can look at, like maybe historically, that'll give us an idea of what we can expect from him? And do you think that even applies to him being with Popovich for so long and having a chance to get four titles with the Spurs?
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, that gives him a leg up on most guys that would have been first-time head coaches, but it's certainly a big adjustment period. If you look around at the coaches in the league that have a lot of success early, most of the time they've been coaches before. Like, if you look around now at the guys who are competing, Eric Spoelstra is an exception, obviously. He took the Heat to the finals in his first year. But he also had LeBron James and Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh. But if I think about a guy like Scotty Brooks from Oklahoma City, who was a first-time guy and took his team deep with Kevin Durant and company, but now is kind of on the hot seat. And the big thing that people pull out about him is that he hasn't, quote, been there before. So it's definitely going to be interesting to see, especially early in the season. I'm not really worried about his X's and O's, but it's kind of more player motivation, like how do you handle the media, that kind of stuff. That'd be the first time head coach would be some added pressure.
Gotcha, cool. So I guess Hawks fans out there are going to be pulling for the Spurs in this one with Miami and Eastern Conference and their new coach trying to get his fifth title. So that's kind of cool. What do you think about the playoffs currently? If we can just touch on that real quick. I know you watched the Heat game tonight.
Certainly, yeah. I think we're still headed for a Heat Spurs final.
I'd have to agree.
I mean, Miami's still the favorite. I do think San Antonio is a threat to Miami, which a lot of people don't think. A lot of people kind of think Miami's just going to cruise, but San Antonio's the type of team where they're going to give Miami some fits, I think. But
very cool. All right. And I just had another question about Splitter. I hate to be jumping back and forth. If, let's say, he was to come to the Hawks this offseason, how would you see Horford and him on the court at the same time? Who plays center? Does it really matter? What do you think their impact could be on the court if he were to be brought in? Because, obviously, I think his chances are improved coming here with Budenholzer now.
Yeah, I think he's the only guy that has a significant bump in likelihood to come. But, yeah, they can definitely play together. I think if we had to pick a center between the two of them, it'd probably be Splitter. He's not quite the perimeter offensive player that Horford can be. Al's really strong in that sort of mid-range jump shot pick-and-pop game. Splitter's kind of exclusively a back-to-the-basket guy on offense. But I think they'd be great, especially defensively, just kind of watching Splitter cover Mike Conley and these pick and rolls and things. He's really mobile, and so is Al. We'd have one of the scarier defensive front lines in the league.
That's definitely good to hear. And Al Horford, do you think he's in a vacuum? Is he a center or is he a power forward? If you build the team around him,
I think it
Because I feel like he's kind of one of those in-between guys who could really play whatever you need him to.
It's certainly like it's kind of the ultimate question with Al. For me, I don't think it matters. There's a camp of people that kind of think he shouldn't play center, and he's kind of playing, quote, out of position. I kind of disagree with that. In today's NBA, you don't really need the 7-foot, you know, bruising center. And he's more – I mean, there's only a handful of guys that really give him legitimate trouble on the block, like Roy Hibbert being the massive guy that he is. Him and Dwight Howard kind of are the only two that jump to mind that really give Al fits. So playing him at center would be fine, but with this free agent class, a lot of the best guys are centers. Splitter, Pekovic, Al Jefferson, who we're going to talk about on the site in the next couple days, Dwight Howard are all kind of legitimate centers, and I think Al could play power forward next to any of them. So it almost doesn't matter, but he's capable of doing both at a really high level, and I think him saying that he's playing out of position at center is kind of wrong. So.
All right, cool. Yep, I'm definitely interested in seeing how things unfold with the Hawks, and you can be sure to stay updated with everything on the site, so be sure to check that out as things continue to develop. Do you have any other thoughts or topics you want to touch on?
Just one thing, quick with Larry Drew. I want to.
Oh, yeah.
I'm probably going to write a piece about this, but Larry Drew is obviously employed still by the Hawks, but he's going to be
still that awkward situation.
Going away, he may go to Milwaukee. He's a finalist for the Bucks job, but I think it's important to note that this really is not an indictment on Larry Drew. Like, he didn't get fired. His contract just ran out, and they wanted to go in a different direction. I actually thought he did a really quality job this year.
Yeah.
I gave him a vote on my fake Coach of the Year ballot. I think I had him third.
What were your first and second choices?
I think it was Popovich and Thibodeau, one and two. I can't remember what the order was, but I really thought if you look at the Hawks roster from this last year, without Lou Williams for the second half of the season, and kind of the way that Danny Ferry chose to sort of rebuild on the fly.
Yeah, they were supposed to be just in a rebuilding year, and they were pretty competitive.
Yeah, I mean, for the Hawks to win 44 games with Lou Williams, in my opinion, their third best player, missed the whole second half of the season. It's kind of an impressive job by Larry Drew. So I kind of hope he lands on his feet and gets another job, because he definitely is not one of the worst coaches in the league. He's definitely, at worst, is in the middle, and I think he's might be near the upper echelon. He did a quality job this year. So.
All right, yeah, and I was going to ask you, now that you mentioned Larry Drew, is he's probably going to go to one of the rebuilding teams, is he not?
Yeah, Milwaukee seems to be the most likely, and Milwaukee could be, like, they could be completely in rebuild depending on what happens in free agency. So.
So in a sense, is this kind of a downgrade job for him, and also why would he want to get out of Atlanta when they're poised to have such a good future ahead of them?
I'm not even sure. I mean, I think he probably would have stayed around if they seemed to have this weird dialogue where they kind of came to an agreement that they would kind of part ways. But I think if Danny Ferry wanted him to stay, he would have stayed.
Okay.
But Milwaukee would be an interesting challenge for him. It's sort of a downgrade, but the Hawks are not the most financially stable franchise. It's kind of the same boat as Milwaukee, so it's probably sort of a lateral move, except for Milwaukee has a little bit worse of a roster. They don't have Al Horford and Josh Smith waiting for him in Milwaukee. So, but I think he could definitely succeed depending on what kind of talent they get there.
All right, cool. So any last thoughts, or you want to talk about? I know that we could talk about Gattis, some baseball stuff, some Braves, Falcons, anything. I mean, I'm pretty much game for whatever at this point.
Yeah, I mean, today was kind of a wild one with the Braves. With
oh, yeah, it was nice. I caught the end of that, which was good, and also put some notes up on the relief pitching, because I was lucky enough to see Anthony Varvero, Luis Avalon, and Corey Guerin pitch each inning. Well, Varvero threw 0.1 innings, and he did terrible. It was kind of hard to watch, but I did a little raw scouting on them, which was nice. If you guys want to see that, you can check that out. And it is so nice to see Brian McGinn hitting home runs. I know we've talked about Evan Gattis a lot, and people are still on a Gattis high, but I love watching Brian McCann right now. And especially since this is his last year in the contract, I'm just going to enjoy watching him and just cross my fingers that he's not gone forever after this year.
Yeah, two homers from McCann were obviously huge today. I mean, I didn't see a lot of it either. I had to work today.
That sucks. Works. Yeah,
those weekday day games to get you every time.
Yeah, but I didn't catch the first one, but I jumped in the game at the sixth inning, whenever Varvero came in to pitch. I was watching
sixth or seventh.
And I saw the second McCann home run. And it was no doubter. And I think both of his home runs were to take the lead for the Braves, which is pretty nice to see.
Yeah, it was kind of a clutch win today. I mean, couple spots where it didn't look particularly good with the bullpen.
Yeah, especially the people on Twitter. It was funny kind of to watch when Varvero came on. And even when we were tied and Freddie's not going to Craig Kimbrell in the bullpen, people were pretty much
talking
it up as a loss immediately. And I thought that was kind of funny how pessimistic they can get when things are going bad over the past couple of days.
I thought the funniest thing of the day was when Gattis came up and didn't come through. It was almost like people were surprised.
Yeah, that was really good at bat by him, actually.
Yeah, I mean, he battled,
I was impressed.
Not coming through.
I don't remember who was pitching at the time, but he threw him pretty much exactly what he needed to throw and what I would have thrown. I think Gattis, his weakest spots, or what pitchers should definitely attack, is a high fastball and just any junk low and away. He's a good hitter, and he can get his hands out there, and he's got a pretty quick swing, but he'll chase anything up at his eyes if it's fast, and then he tends to chase some breaking balls out of the zone still. So it was just a really good sequence right there, and you can't blame him. He's come through so much already. I wasn't expecting him to come through because that would just be ridiculous. I've said it like the past two or three times, no way you're going to do it again, and he just keeps doing it. So I think he just went back down to the level of human being in a lot of people's books.
Yeah, you can't come. I think at one point he had five homers and 17 at-bats, which is just, that's absurd. But other than that, I mean, not a whole lot to take out of today the bullpen's obviously kind of a mess right now.
Yep, and the big thing for the Braves will be for Jordan Walden to come back healthy and to come back strong. I know he had a rehab outing yesterday, I believe.
Yeah, maybe.
Right. It might have been tonight, but he's supposed to be coming back sometime this week. And if he can come back and kind of jump in the back of the bullpen with Kimbrell and Avalon or whoever they're going to put, maybe Guerin. I really like Avalon more because I think he has better stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He was really, really good today, I thought. Guerin today, actually, it was weird. I watched him throw the ninth inning when we were tied, and he came up against the heart of the Toronto lineup and threw nothing but sliders. Or curveballs. I'm pretty sure
it was
sure
all righties, right?
It was three righties, which is fine. But I was really wanting to see some other pitches from him, just because if he leaves that thing up, it's gone. But he did well. I can't blame him for anything. He kept it low and away in the zone, so it was nice. 1-2-3 inning. It was really quick.
Yeah, bringing Walden back will be huge. I mean, there's not really a guy other than Kimbrell that you look at and you're really that comfortable with right now.
Mm.
Gearing against righties, I feel really good about, but.
As a lefty
up there, good luck to you.
As a setup man, it's not a good role. He's still kind of a specialist guy and a mid to long relief pitcher in my book.
Yeah, I think Avalon's probably the best guy right now.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Trust the most.
Today, Avalon, he was hitting 94, 95 on his fastball, but it has more movement. With Anthony Varvero, he can push it up to 97, and he did today. But it is flat, and it is over the middle of the plate, and he cannot hit with his curveball. You can read the stuff I wrote about him in the recap from yesterday. But, yeah, Avalon, definitely. I think he has potential to be a decent setup man if he needs to be. Obviously, we'd rather have him in the middle of the bullpen. But with O'Flaherty and Johnny Venters going down, that's not really an option.
Yeah, and after those guys, I mean, you get into Carpenter and Rasmus, and it's not you don't feel great about those two on the mound at the moment, especially Rasmus has been kind of a disaster. I mean, it's a small sample, obviously, but he has not been good.
So. That guy. What a headache. But also, I wanted to mention Gosh, that's going to slip my mind. Reed Johnson. A lot of people were kind of complaining about how much playing time Reed Johnson has gotten lately. And honestly, this is just speculation and just a hunch, but we've been talking about Reed Johnson being traded. So I think Ren or Freddie are deciding that they need to kind of showcase him, see if he can up his value at all. And so far he hasn't done that. He's done terrible in the limited at-bats he's got. So you can't really blame him. He hasn't played regularly in like a month.
Yeah, as I said, he didn't even appear for like 10 days.
No, it was a long time. He's just been sitting on the bench with Gattis. But I really think they're going to try and move him for a relief pitcher because he's, in my opinion, the most expendable player on the team right now.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, couldn't agree more with that. He actually almost doubled down the line today. It was barely foul in one of his, I can't think it was his third at bat. But, I think you gotta throw him out there every once in a while. You can't keep carrying him and not playing him at all.
Exactly.
Yeah, he's definitely, in my opinion, the odd man out. I saw an argument today on Twitter about Juan Francisco potentially being the odd man out, and I don't really see
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I don't see that as well. I like Juan Francisco. I think he's a good player, and I think he could help the team, especially with. I mean, who's going to be your left-handed bat off the bench if you trade Francisco?
That's my thought, exactly. I mean, you'll know the guy that's left-handed, Schaefer, and he's...
Exactly, and he's not...
He's your pinch runner defensive guy, isn't
he? Exactly, you don't need to pinch hit him in a clutch situation. I'd take Francisco every day over Schaefer, even if he strikes out all the time, but whatever. But Reed Johnson, in this year, he still has decent numbers in the limited amount of time that he's been playing. So I feel like some team would have an interest in, like we said before, maybe platooning him in the outfield. But right now he's got a 280, 333, 380 slash, which is really right in line with his career, except for the slugging's a bit down. But, I mean, he's only had 55 plate appearances so far.
Yeah, it really has nothing to do with him being anything different than what we thought he would be. It's just that Gattis kind of stole his bats. And Schaefer's been really good, so there's really been no reason to play Reed. I mean, you could debate all day whether Schaefer should be stealing at bats from BJ Upton already, but yeah, Schaefer's been fantastic. So
actually, shout out to Scott Coleman. I don't know if you guys know him, but he had an interesting piece on Talking Chop of SB Nation where he said, I think it had to do, it might have actually been Gattis and not Schaefer. But it was talking about BJ Upton, and he said that if he was in charge, he'd move Hayward over to center, put Justin Upton in right, and Evan Gattis in left field for like a solid week or something like that, just to kind of let BJ just get in the cage, get his mind off the game, and just keep Gattis in the lineup when he's hot. And I can't really disagree with that, with the way BJ's been playing and the way Gattis has been playing.
Yeah.
I tend to think that giving BJ at bats would be good for him, but obviously, I'm not the expert, so if they think that would help him, then, I mean, go for it. Gattis needs to get some at-bats.
I kind of agree with you. I think letting him kind of play through is probably the best way, but, I mean, there's been some rumblings about sort of some swing changes with BJ, too, in the last couple of days. That was one of the rumors I heard today, was that that's why he sat back-to-back days, because they're working on some swing changes with him. I don't know. We're not going to know until we see him again, but...
Yeah. We'll definitely keep an eye on that in the coming days.
Yep.
It'll be interesting to see because he's going to be with us for 5 years. And whether we like that or not, it's probably going to depend on what happens here in the next coming weeks and if he can get his head and his swing back in it.
Yep. Absolutely. I think he'll be all right. I'm still positive on BJ. But
yeah, I am too. I think he'll come around. All right. Well, I think that about wraps it up for this one. Do you have any last thoughts on anything Atlanta, Falcons, Braves, Hawks, anything new on the site, Brad?
No, just keep an eye out. We're going to be doing some work on the Hawks as things get going with the draft and free agency. I've already started sort of the free agent series with the wish list, but the draft is, I think, 4 weeks away already. So we'll start looking at the draft, and obviously day by day, Braves coverage and some off-season Falcon stuff too. So.
Yep. And I know the MLB draft is coming up fairly soon as well. So
it's in like a week, I think.
Wow. Well, fairly soon, quickly. So we'll have some stuff up on that. I'll probably work on the MLB draft stuff in a couple days. And
I'll
also,
defer to you on that one.
Yep, that'll be cool. You can take care of the basketball, and I'll just handle the baseball stuff. But, yeah, just like the Facebook page if you haven't already. Oh, big news, this podcast is now officially on iTunes. So since all of you guys have an iTunes account, just search ATL All Day. Should pop up the first thing. I think there's one explicit song that's called All Day that's right below us. But if you type in podcast, search us, you'll find us really quick. Hit subscribe. I think we should. I think it's a pretty safe bet to say we'll have a podcast a week now. I don't think that'll be too difficult for us. It's kind of hard working around schedules, but we've been pretty solid at it for the first two times at least.
Yeah, we'll get to happen.
Subscribe to that, like the Facebook page. Trying to be more active on the Twitter account, so you can follow that as well. And just keep checking the site and pulling for Atlanta sports, because we're the greatest.
Absolutely.
All right, guys, you have a good one. ATL All Day theme music has been provided by PodcastThemes.com.